Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers, and welcome to the show. Today I have my good friend Beck here. We're going to be talking about Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. Yeah, I just said it twice, but don't worry. We have you covered for as many Beetlejuices as you want to have for a Beetlejuice episode. So this is the sequel to the 1980s film Beetlejuice. So let's go on ahead. Let's talk about Beetlejuice. And hey, Beck, welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Good to be back.
It's good to have you back. Last time we did this, we actually did Deadpool and Wolverine. We did that with my friend Soda. We had such a great time. Then you pre-ordered me to go ahead and assign you this position of going live with Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice for the review. So I appreciate that so much that you wanted to come back.
For sure. And I had to call dibs.
Hey, Marley, how are you doing? It's great having you here. Thank you in the comment section. Okay, so here's the thing. Everybody has been knowing that this movie has fell into like developmental hell since maybe even the 90s, because I remember reading up something on this in the 90s, then in 2011, then it went into 2015, and now we finally have Beetlejuice. And I'll be honest with you, when I went into Beetlejuice, I went into like a medium kind of flair to it, because of the fact when you have a legendary franchise like Beetlejuice and stuff like that, it's hard to do that 30 years after. We've seen movies where they bombed after 30 years, all except Top Gun Maverick. That was like the only one that made over $1 billion because of Tom Cruise. But with this one, I went into like low expectations because I'm like, I don't want to go into it being like, yeah, this is going to be the best Beetlejuice movie ever. It's going to be just like the old one and stuff like that. But I couldn't help myself this morning, though, because I seen that whole entire thing where the employee is skating around in the theater with the Beetlejuice costume. And then it just amplified my experience a little bit. I'm like, I need to settle myself back down over to my medium, and that's where I landed at, was about a medium. What about for you?
Well, I mean, Beetlejuice, it's a cult classic at this point. It came out in 1988, so did I. So I grew up watching it. My parents had it on VHS. I watched it literally so many times the tape wore out. Okay, so my birthday's in a week. My wife got me a shirt that says "Never Trust the Living Set the Sandworm On It." She gave it to me a week early so I could wear it to see Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice today. So Beetlejuice, it's my jam. So when I first, they've been talking about a sequel for 20 years at this point, and so I've kind of tried to keep things low key because I'm like, there's not going to be a way to do the original justice at this point, if for no reason other than it's been 36 years and those actors have aged. I knew going into it we weren't going to see the Maitlands because ghosts don't age.
Right. Not only that, but I think they could have done it, but do it with the, I call it, it's called deepfaking, but I call it the Benjamin Button effect, where basically you could do the Benjamin Button effect, but still, it wouldn't feel organic, it wouldn't feel authentic. And I like how they wrote that in there. Hey, look, the Maitlands are not in this. They just moved on. They found a loophole. So I like how they wrote
crossover.
Yes, I thought that was actually perfect on how they did that. So, and then they gave enough room for Jenna Ortega to actually do what she needs to do without having to focus on the nostalgic element of it. Yes, there is some callbacks, but there's not enough. It's enough just to have like little small nuggets here and there, but it's able to let Jenna Ortega grow in this movie, which I think that I really did appreciate. And of course, having Winona Ryder in there, that's all you need. And then you have her mom coming back again in this. So I thought that was really good, having Catelyn O'Hara back.
Now, I will say Jenna Ortega was born to play Lydia Deetz's daughter. Okay.
Yes.
Full stop. I mean, she's obviously also a perfect Wednesday Addams, but you look at her and you're like, oh, Lydia Deans grew up and had a kid. That's Jenna Ortega's whole vibe, which is perfect. So like like Wandona said, that part of the reason they waited so long to make the movies, they had to wait for Jenna to be born. So that's perfect. Now, as far as Catherine O'Hara, I love Catherine O'Hara. You know, she's one of those childhood icons. She was in Beetlejuice. She was in the Home Alone series. And now she's on Schitt's Creek. She did work with Tim Burton and the other guys on Nightmare Before Christmas. You know, she voiced like two different characters in that movie. I will say my sticking point with her in Beetlejuice, is she wasn't playing Delia Dietz. She was playing Moira Rose.
Okay. You see, for me, I think that it's been a while since we've seen these characters and where they're at. The point where I actually think that this is how she would actually be now, 30 years later.
That's also possible.
That's how I see it. It's not going to be the same, because we all grow up, right? We're not the same people that we once were 20, 10, 15 years ago, right? So I figured, okay, this is actually how she would probably act 30 years later.
Yeah.
So I didn't have no problems or beef with how she was actually portraying that character. I thought that she was just making the character grow at her own ability of how we last seen her and the things that she's going through now.
Yeah, that just stood out to me. It felt much more Moira than Delia, but no, that totally makes sense. Obviously, like I said, it's been 36 years. People grow, people change.
Right. But okay, so let's get into this overall. Let's just get into the overall meat and potatoes of this movie, though. So basically, this whole entire movie is just about the fact that you have Winona Ryder, whose father just passed away. Now she has to go back to where the Mainlands were originally at. And now she also has to be in this house again and also be in the small town as well. And so I knew that the father was going to die. I knew that initially because of the fact that the actor's a douchebag.
Yeah.
In real life and the stuff that he did. I like how Tim winded up killing off his character, because I was thinking, okay, heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking just basic stuff, but no, he goes on ahead, goes further with it. He makes the father die of being bitten by a shark after a plane crash.
I think that was a really good way to get around not having to recast the character, because that way they didn't even have to use his likeness aside from the claymation and the image on the gravestone, which, having a shark fin gravestone for a man killed by a shark, and A, that, and B, what were they burying?
That's the beautiful thing about this, though. That would be exactly what Catherine O'Hara's character would do, is to make an art piece for her husband because she loved
exactly.
him.
Exactly. I was just like, that's a little much, bro. That's insensitive. But no, and so like by the fact that his ghost is headless, you don't even have to... You don't have to go into like a CRISPR gloving situation.
No. And then also too, another thing that I really do appreciate with this is the fact that, you know, you have her sculptures still being there in the background. So you're like, okay, this is a call back to Beetlejuice 1. Now she has an institute for people of the arts. And now Winona Ryder's daughter's in it, Lydia's daughter's in this whole entire deal now. And, you know, I just like the fact that, you know, the mother and daughter aspect, they're not getting along, but you can feel the chemistry between the two of them and how Lydia is now dealing with the same thing that her stepmother was going through in the very first Beetlejuice movie. And it's kind of like karma. And even Catherine O'Hara's character is kind of smirking a little bit. It's like, huh, karma, huh?
Yeah. Delia was very much like, this is exactly how you treated me, by the way.
But I just thought the chemistry landed for all three of them to be in there. Then you had the ball bag, douchebag. Rory was just so over the top for me, to the point where I just wanted to punch. He was the most punchable face in this movie.
I was waiting for him to die.
I was too. I was hoping Beetlejuice would have actually just killed him.
Yeah, just
off.
But I was waiting. I wasn't sure how they were going to do it, if it was just going to be like, you know, off a balcony or what, but the dude had to go.
Yeah, he was the most punchable face in this movie.
Yeah.
And even Lydia's daughter even calls him out on it. Look, my mom can believe that BS, but I'm not going to believe that BS.
I did like Beetlejuice giving him the truth serum and completely exposing his motivations, his methods, why he latched on to Lydia. But yeah, that was a good move.
There was a quote that I really liked in this movie where it's basically how you're losing yourself in this relationship and you're just settling for whatever comes in. And Beetlejuice is pretty much that person, even though she only needs him for that moment to get her out of that situation that she's with that guy, Rory. But it's like, Beetlejuice even says it. He goes, all you're doing is basically settling, and now here I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I like
so you're going to settle for me now.
Right, exactly. Going into the next relationship with Beetlejuice and being forced to marry him. But we'll get into that in a minute about the whole entire ending of this thing. But I do like the fact that now the daughter is in this town and she's trying to figure out the way to actually fit in with the small town vibe compared to where she is, because her mom's also a host of a TV show as well. So Lydia is now of a thing called Ghost House. Yeah. And, you know, and she can see ghosts, and then she's also seeing Beetlejuice. She's seeing that aspect of it. And of course, Beetlejuice is actually conjuring himself up into the world to haunt her because he can't get over her after 30 years.
Yeah, she thinks she's hallucinating. No, you're being haunted.
Right. But I thought the whole entire initial setup of them going over to the funeral and then moving into now we're back in this Maitland's house. You're being forced into Rory being marrying you on the fucking funeral. That I'm like, dude, all you care about is one thing and one thing only.
Attention.
Yep. Attention. Not only attention, but money, greed, and also mooch off of Lydia's fame.
Mm-hmm. Because he and, can manipulate her better as a husband than as a manager.
Exactly. But I like the aspect of the fact that we cannot stand this guy and we just want him gone. And then when they get sucked into the model of it, he's like, am I dreaming? What happened?
Like, I just had the weirdest dream. Meanwhile, but, Lydia's like, I just had my leg gnawed by a baby that clawed its way out of me. So, no, it was not a fucking dream.
I think that's more terrifying than what he went through.
Yes. The body horror in this movie, dude. I was just saying, the body horror in this movie. I feel like a lot of times they overdid that a little bit just to be gross for the sake of being gross. Like the slime dripping out of his out of Beetlejuice's mouth. Danny DeVito's whole entity, which, by the way, fucking amazing cameo. Did not expect that.
Me either. And the first thought to my mind is like, is this Penguin? Is he inside this afterlife?
Well, you know, because at first you can only see like part of the back of his head and shoulder, so you think it's the guy who was mopping originally when the Maitlands were there, and then it's Danny goddamn DeVito drinking Drano.
Me, on the other hand, I already knew the shape of his body. I'm like, I told my wife about this. I said, that's fucking Danny DeVito. And so I'm fanboying at this moment. And I'm like, is this Penguin because of the fact that Batman killed him? Batman, yeah. So I was just thinking, like, this is like a crossover universe because of Tim Burton directing this movie. He also directed Batman Returns. So I was thinking on that aspect of it.
That is a really cool crossover thought. But yeah, no. As soon as he turned around, like, Danny, goddamn, you know, trying to be polite because I'm in a theater full of people.
Fucking burrito. And then you get this whole entire deal where I don't feel like they needed to have a big bad in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like you needed to have a villain in this movie.
They spent so much time building her up, and then it was completely anticlimactic. It was a needless loose end, and then they lazily tied it up by having her get eaten by a sandworm at the same time as Rory, which I feel is just a callback to the first movie when, you know, Barbara rides in on the sandworm.
Right. They've just rehashed the same ending that they did just for a modern day feel to it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted something different instead of the same old schnick that we got from the first one.
Yeah.
I just feel like it was like, it's like, okay, Tim, what's going on? I have writer's block right now. Why don't we just go in here and write the same ending? No one's going to care.
Yeah, no one's going to notice. It's been 36 years.
Right, it's perfectly fine. Instead of having the demon being the one that's going to marry them, we're just going to have a regular priest that Beetlejuice is going to possess.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do this whole over-the-top song with you lip-syncing.
Yeah, that was fucking weird.
I get the fact that it worked for
Dayo. That went on way too long.
Yeah, that bit went on way too long. The Dayo thing worked for what it did back in that day. And that worked for that time. And it wasn't that long of a bit either. It's like maybe a 1 minute bit or something like that. This went on for like about 5 minutes.
Yes, uncomfortably so.
Yes. And then there's also another one where he's singing to her with the guitar. I thought that bit was okay. I thought that was okay.
But the overly extended musical aside he did have a lot of weird asides. Now, one thing that really got me is the difference in his character. In Beetlejuice, he is an antagonistic demon. All he wants is to take advantage of someone to get him to the other side. This Beetlejuice, he felt more like the BJ from the comics, from the cartoons. You remember?
That's what
were buddies and going on adventures together because they were buddies going on an adventure together. They had a mutually beneficial relationship in this movie. And you know, he's got a creepy picture of her as a teenager on his desk, clearly been pining after his Lolita all these years. You know,
you see, girls, men do care. It may take you about over 30 years for them to get over you, but they still, that's someone that's not going to give you up or anything. You know, he was just trying to find himself, and he had to find himself 30 years.
he did seem to have started a legitimate business with the shrunken head guys, which, speaking of loose ends, what the fuck happened to them? They're just out in the world now?
Yeah, okay, I didn't think about that. You bring in a very good point. It's like
they just ran off.
Right? And you know what that reminded me of? That PS1 game back in the day? You know what I'm talking about, right? I can't remember the name of that game for my life of me, but it takes place in a graveyard. You're a knight in the graveyard, and you're trying to tackle. You basically kill these shrunken heads and stuff like that, and the way the shape was and stuff like that. It reminded me of that. But you're absolutely right, though. It didn't make sense for them to still be out in our world because of the fact that William Dafoe was supposed to bring them back.
Exactly.
So therefore, he also broke his own damn rules himself.
Yeah, I mean, that was here. a dozen shrunken head dudes running out. Yeah. In Winter River now. You would think Willem Dafoe is literally there with the police force. They could absolutely go out and round up these guys.
Right. But that's also another thing.
Brain exposed.
The William Dafoe thing, I love William Dafoe. I love him to death. But you didn't need to have him in there. You didn't need to have the ex-wife in this movie at all to do anything. It could have been it's just enough. I told my wife this too. I said, it's just enough just having Jenna Ortega as the daughter. They're not getting along. There's friction there. You're bringing her back into this house that Lydia grew up in.
They tried to make too many storylines.
Yeah, there's like three storylines within one movie that they're trying to tell in an hour and 40-something minutes, which I love the runtime. I didn't feel the runtime with this. Usually it would be a two-hour movie. But
it definitely wasn't too long. Now, I will say one of the storylines that I loved was the little teenage boy. Astrid's little boyfriend.
Yeah.
That was a fun twist. And because when Lydia dropped her off, she's like, oh, he looks cute. Of course you can see him. You can see ghosts.
Well, I didn't even think of the fact that maybe you should pass it on to Astrid. I thought maybe I might have missed her. You know what I mean? Which also explains why Lydia couldn't see her father or anything either. I was also thinking maybe she was also telling her that maybe the guy left. Maybe they had a bad fight or whatever and just said, hey, look, he died.
You're right. I didn't think that maybe he was still alive. I didn't think necessarily that he would have abandoned Astrid, but because I believe the story of him being on the Amazon. But I wasn't sure that he had actually died. I thought maybe he was injured, amnesiac somewhere in South America.
Right. But the whole deal of Lydia not being able to see him and then Astrid is not going to be able to see him. So I thought maybe the fact that Astrid maybe missed her mark, you know, even though she is part of that strange and unusual kind of deal.
Very much so.
But, okay, so she meets up with this other guy that's in the treehouse. And I like the chemistry between them two. I thought that chemistry really worked. I thought that storyline could have worked just with that alone, too. That's my point. I think that anything with Jenna Ortega as Astrid and anything conflicting with Jenna, Winona Ryder's character Lydia worked. So you could have just had those elements of the conflict of the mother and daughter relationship. And then, of course, you're having Beetlejuice, who's not over Lydia over 30 years. He comes into play because he wants to comfort her in some way in his own demonic way. Yeah. And so now he wants to try and lure Lydia's daughter in Astrid into this world. Mm-hmm. You could have actually just built on that and it would have been fine.
And but they didn't even make,
follow it. Yeah.
I'm sorry. It like with Beetlejuice trying to marry Lydia, they didn't even make it, oh, I need a green card to stay in the living world. He just wanted to marry her.
Right.
And just inexplicably, which, you know, the callback to the wedding tux and the red wedding dress was iconic. The two of them getting married in red had a deep impact. I wish this was a color picture. My wife and I literally got married in red and black. Like,
that would have been perfect.
She had a white dress and a red sweater, and I had a red shirt, a black tie, and vest and stuff. Like, Beetlejuice was formative of an experience on me. Like, I knew I was getting married in red. But I don't know. So much. One thing I did want to mention that really bothered me, the house wasn't right. Structurally, architecturally, the house was not right. It was missing the deck with the fake wall.
Yep.
I feel like the tower was on the wrong side. Because, like, I just watched the original movie Monday.
I'd watched it too. So.
When Adam and Barbara are in the attic and Barbara's like, I think that little girl saw us talking about Lydia, the tower is on the left-hand side. In this movie, the tower's on the right-hand side, like with the attic window.
Right. Okay. Now, with the deck, I can understand maybe Charles getting rid of the deck because it's just him by himself. And anything that reminded of Catherine O'Hara, he probably got rid of.
Well, they didn't divorce.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't. But it made it seem like there was something. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. He went on a trip.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
He was on a bird watching expedition or something. Yeah. Right. She said, Daddy left me. And she's like, oh, my God, he's divorcing you? No, worse. Lied. No, God, no. That's awful. No, he just died.
I have a question. When that foreign guy goes into the hole and he dies, did you think he was going to have a larger role in this, like in the afterlife a little bit? Or did you think that was just like a little bit of a thing of. Just for a little small comic bit.
I think it did give us a good introduction into the afterlife because he's the one who introduces Danny DeVito because he asks him, you know, where the hell am I? What the hell is going on? And I mean, I'm guessing I don't speak French. I'm guessing that's what he asked. And, you know, Danny DeVito tells him where to go and he kind of displays some of the irritation with the bureaucracy of the afterlife. Now, one thing that bugged me about the afterlife, in the first movie, it's canon that the way you become a civil servant in the afterlife is by committing suicide. Astrid's dad didn't, and he's out there punching tickets as an immigration officer. Willem Dafoe was an actor who had a live grenade go off, and he's the cop. You know, so there's a lot happening here that doesn't line up with actual verbally spoken canon in the first movie.
Right. For me, I'm thinking maybe the fact that, you know, they just got a job, basically, and they skipped all that because of the fact he didn't commit suicide. Maybe that's just something that they just skipped over. I don't know, but...
I don't know. The idea of having a job hunt after I die makes me want to die twice.
Right, exactly. It's like, look, I don't want to die by working. I did that.
You know what I'm saying? This is not how you want to spend the eternity.
By the way, RoboCop had the worst life. He ended up having to work even though he died.
Yes.
But like, it's also the same case with this. Right. But that just doesn't work for me, though, too, is like the whole entire brightness of the of that afterlife office now. Because before it was like kind of dimmed, kind of gothic looking. It kind of looks like Hot Topic now in the modern day era.
Oh, my God. Now, I will say a lot of it was kind of sanitized. At the same time, some of the gore, like I said, was a little overdone. But one thing I did like is that they kept the same animation effects for the sandworms.
Yes. Like,
there's no cleaning that up. It doesn't need to be cleaned up. It's perfect as it is. And the claymation bit with the plane crash, I see why they did it, because they couldn't have Jeffrey Jones.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Interesting choice to make it look even worse than Coraline, but you know, that was a thing. But I mean, I guess of all the ways they could have done it, if Tim Burton is going to do something animated, it's going to be clay.
Right. And I like the fact that it was claymation. I like the fact it was stop animation even for the sandworms, because he even said it before. He said he's going to add some practical effects in with some CGI. Mm-hmm. He's not going to change or alter anything within the movie itself. He's going to try and like amplify it to where it's a little for modern day, but also would go back to the way it was for us when we grew up. So it definitely worked for the sandworm and for the way everything else looked. Then I also want to get into the fact that you have the husband walking around with the and stuff. Mm-hmm. Did you like that, or did you like think it was like too much?
With Charles?
With Charles.
Eaton?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that was overplayed. I think that was done pretty well. The fact that he could mysteriously see and speak apparently was odd. That was definitely a choice, but I don't feel like that was too much. I think that was just enough, because Charles was constantly being spoken about. So having that, having him still around in that capacity, I don't think was a bad choice. Now having Delia die by being over dramatic at his graveside with venomous snakes that were supposed to be fanged, very on brand. I didn't expect her to die, but if she had to die, that was very Adelia Dietz way to die.
Right. I also thought that that would actually be something that she would do. She's very artistic, and she would be way over the top and doing that kind of thing to mourn Charles. So that actually works for the character, and is also the fact too that she's even using the sculptures again for her own use though too. I love the sculptures in this thing as well. Even the one that swallowed her, the first one.
Yeah,
she's got that.
Did you see that?
What's that?
They had two of those. Did you see that? There was one in front of the house and one in front of the school.
Yeah,
there was the one in front of the school, and then they had one in front of the house as well.
Yeah, I seen that one. Those two.
Yeah, I did like the house being shrouded. That was a cool effect.
Let's talk about Bob. Let's talk about Beetlejuice's
your buddy you got behind you.
Yes. One thing about Bob is he ain't no snitch. He's not going to snitch out the person. He died not snitching.
Yep. Even once his mouth came unsewed, he still didn't say a word.
Nope. That's a friend right there. That's actually what you call a good work friend that won't snitch on you. But I do like the fact that they put Bob over there as his double. For protection. Just look, Bob. What I'm going to do is you're going to come in front of me, and then I'm going to sneak out the back, okay? And I definitely like that. And then the F-bombs, I thought the F-bombs worked.
Well, you know, they only get one.
Right. And that's what I told my wife, because that's what I told her. I said,
The one he dropped was good. It was very perfectly timed. The second one that they had to bleep, I'm like, okay. You know, you knew you only got one. You had judicious use of it, but you could have it beep the second time. That was a little disruptive.
Not for me. I thought it worked for Beetlejuice's character to break that fourth wall. And I told my wife, the reason why they did that is because of the fact they wanted to keep the PG-13 rating. Mm-hmm. If not, they're going to go rated R with it, with having more than one F-bomb.
Right.
But I thought it fit Beetlejuice's character and the way he did that. The dialogue in this is really good. He's really fast-paced with it, and still, he never loses the beat of playing Beetlejuice. The makeup, for me, didn't land well at all. Right. I thought the makeup could have been a lot better for him.
Yeah, because I feel like they were trying to not only recreate the original, but also hide that 36 years have come across Michael Keaton's face.
Right.
So that, because I was saying, you know, there's no age in the Maitlands, but, you know, Michael Keaton, he wears so much makeup, it's hard to tell. But I don't know if cameras are just at so much higher definition now than they were in 1988 that you can see every crack and wrinkle in the makeup.
But don't forget, we have 4K TVs. We can see every single inch of everything.
You can see every pore.
Right, exactly. Every wrinkle you can think of, we can see.
So what looked a little more realistic in 88 looks a little campy now.
Yeah, it looks a little dated in a sense. But I think that if they put on a little bit of extra layer of makeup for him, mm-hmm. especially under the chin and stuff like that, it would actually work. Like I want to talk about the gore factor too, though, because I thought that was the sake of having gore for the sake of having gore. It doesn't do mm-hmm. anything to actually amplify the story or anything like that, because there was no really any gore in the very first one, unless you talk about the head spinning and stuff like that.
And the beetle legs flying out that one time that you see from behind.
Right. But I just thought that was just like an odd choice to have mm-hmm. compared to the original one.
There was no slime in the original. The grossest thing that happened was he ate a couple of bugs.
Right. He ate a bug, especially that fly that he winds up luring in with a Twinkie bar.
Slapped her with.
Yeah.
Oh, the Zag Nut. The Zag Nut, yeah.
Right. But then, let me think what else I have to say that was actually really positive about this.
Yeah.
Though, too, because there is some positives mixed in with some of the negatives. But
I enjoyed it. I don't want to come across like I hated it. Like
No. I don't hate it. I just
try to keep our expectations realistic.
Right. Because here's the thing. I went in with like a medium expectation for this mm-hmm. because of the 30 years, like I mentioned earlier. But I just think some of the decisions that they made could have been fleshed out a lot better with having one storyline and that's it. And then even when you see Astrid going into the house and then you see the parents in there, I thought that was really interesting choice of not showing the parents' faces.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, something is up with the parents. That was my first initial thoughts.
When he revealed to her that he was dead, I'm like, okay, that's kind of sweet. He's haunting his parents. They don't know their dead son is in the house. That's why his mom is stress baking. That's why his dad just sits there depressed, watching TV all the time. Okay, you know, that makes sense. And then little Jane's like, no, he murdered his parents. And she's, fuck.
That went dark quick.
Yeah, I was like, that went dark quick.
But at the same time, though, I'm also thinking, nah, there's something more to this whenever I've seen them not showing the faces. I'm like, something is off with it, and I don't know what it is. And then once you get the reveal of it, I was like, okay, that actually makes sense. And this also explains why Lydia is the only one that could see him. Then you have Jane coming back again, wanting to sell the house again, which is the most annoying character of this, aside from Rory.
Well, Jane, and then little Jane, and then there's little Jane. And then, oh my God, and what was it? Now, I did think it was interesting that his handbook for the recently deceased, he said he got it from a yard sale originally. And I'm like, holy shit, what if that's Lydia's that she got from the Maitlands, you know?
Right.
And, but no, obviously he got that when he actually died. But I do think it's interesting that him and both of his parents that he killed are all stuck in the same house. Like, how awkward is that?
And they can't go any further than the house because that's where they all died at.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's that TV show.
I
don't know if it's that TV show Ghosts, where they can only go outside the mansion and they can't go any further than that.
And it's like everybody who's died there over the ages. Like, there's a caveman and a scouter master. I haven't actually seen it, but I've seen, like, you know, bits, snippets.
It's hilarious. It's an hilarious show. If you're into dark humor, I definitely recommend that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then the whole entire deal too with Lydia's mom, and I thought she fit into this very good. I thought that was really good on how they did that. And then she goes into the afterworld,
mm-hmm.
and I like how the shock of the fact of the matter is, she's like, "Oh, I know people. They can get me out of this." No, they can't.
Or did that used to work for you?
That's sweet.
Yeah. Oh. Your husband can fix things. Yeah, go find him. He's somewhere around here.
Right.
I didn't know they reunited. That was cool. They got on the Soul Train. Soul Train was a nice touch. That was fun.
What do you think of the Beetlejuice origin story?
I liked it. You know, because one of the lines that stuck out to me in the original was, well, I lived through the Black Plague. I attended Juilliard. I'm a graduate of Harvard Business School. And I'm like, okay, he lived through the Black Plague. How fucking old is this guy? But then I'm like, how did you go to Harvard at Juilliard? First of all, looking like this.
Right.
But I do think that's interesting that the fact that his wife poisoned him explains some of the muck around him. Good to know that the hairstyle hasn't changed since the plague times. Now, the wife, I'm not saying that wasn't a fun storyline. I'm just saying it was maybe one too many and that they didn't tie it up nicely.
I just feel like they didn't need to have it. I think that you could just on the origin story without giving us anything else.
Right.
You know, they could have done
she
like
didn't
a
really
flashback.
Add anything.
No, she didn't add anything to it. It was like watching Nightmare Before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the girl, Lily.
Sally. And, sewed herself together.
Thank you. It's been a long ass time since I've seen the movie. But it's like she's actually stapling herself together, pulling herself together with her own body parts and stapling herself. And then you get that whole entire anticlimactic scene that we talked about at the end of it. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't really do anything. The ex-wife, I was expecting it to be a lot more darker and stuff like that. And she comes busting into the church. Yeah. I was expecting more of a confrontation. Instead, it was like, okay, well, let me go on ahead and get my mom's, my grandmother's lipstick, knock on the thing, and that's it.
And it magically grabs a sandworm. Yeah. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. But, now, the wife putting herself together, that was a cool scene.
Yeah.
Again, kind of unnecessary storyline. If they're not going to use it properly, don't freaking do it at all. But at first, I thought it was going to be Katie McGrath, just the way the face looked a little bit at first. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with Katie McGrath. She was on, she was in Dracula. She was in Supergirl.
Yeah.
She's done a couple of things. I thought it was Katie McGrath at first. And part of me is just like, why is this kind of hot? I don't know. But no, like, so that was a cool scene. Now, I did like that her left ring finger was specifically detached because you remember in the first movie when they're getting married, he pulls out a finger with a ring on it. He's like, I tell you, sweetheart, she meant nothing to me. Pulls the ring off and throws the finger. So that was cool that her finger specifically was detached. And after she stapled it off, I don't know if you saw later, I think it was when she went for Bob, that finger itself was purple compared to the rest of her hand.
Yeah, I noticed it. But also, too, I thought that it was somebody that he killed. This is actually when I was thinking of the first one. I'm like, okay, well, maybe he's just telling her that, hey, look, you know, she meant nothing to me. I thought it was just some dead body that he whacked and took it off of the dead body and made their, you know what I'm saying? But know that if it's his ex-wife, that makes it even more hilarious, too.
So that was a neat callback.
And then, like you said, this does have a callback to the cartoons, the animated TV series, though, too, especially with the train going into the afterlife.
Yeah.
And I like the callback to that. I thought they did a really good job with it. The Soul Train thing, maybe a little too much. But other than that, though, the look of the subway and everything felt like the animated series. Mm-hmm. And I just wish they would actually say, well, where are you going? Nowhere. And then all of a sudden it just turns white. I wish they would have done something like that, but overall, it worked.
Now, the dream sequence at the end.
Oh, God. Did you like that or no?
Well, at first, I'm like, this is a really weird way to wrap up this movie. I'm like, okay, I can see it. They're going to visit the most haunted places in the world, like she had planned to do with her dad. Okay, she would absolutely fall in love with a vampire cosplayer. I don't know about looking like she's getting married 5 minutes later and suddenly having a baby while she still looks like she's in high school. But yes, Jenna Ortega, I know she's in her 20s, but she looks 12. I can't help it. But then the Beetlejuice baby is killing doctors. And
it kind of reminds me of the Slim Shady, the death of Slim Shady PR thing that they did, right? With the evil baby.
Oh, man. The baby Beetlejuice was like the fly crawling up one nostril and out the other. It's like, and then the fact that when the baby lands back in Astrid's lap, she's going to smile at it. And then that's what wakes Lydia up, like, nope, that's a step too far.
And then Beetlejuice wakes up next to her and goes, weird dream, huh?
Yeah. And then she wakes up for real alone. And I was just like, because before it was revealed that that was a dream sequence, I was just like, they are not ending this movie. Now, but having her wake up from that as a nightmare, that was a much more fitting ending.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought that maybe this is just me thinking though, man. I was thinking to myself, they could have just ended it where Beetlejuice wakes up, Lydia's just having a nightmare, and then, you know, she just wakes up and has a nightmare, and then Beetlejuice is next to her and he goes, weird dream, huh? And then all of a sudden it just cuts to credits.
Yeah. That yeah, no, that would have been good one. That would have been good. That would have been good. Now they, you know, then you never know. You just wonder forever. And then that could open up a sequel to Beetlejuice, you know.
Have it three times this time.
Exactly. And, you know, have Astrid take more of the main roles, since clearly she can see ghosts now. You know, I do think that would have opened the door to yet another, you know, in another 30 years. but I don't know.
How would you rate this, though? If you're ranking the, like, if you, how would you rate it? Out of five?
Out of five. Maybe a solid three.
Okay. Because I was having trouble with rating this one. Like, I need to sit on it until we talked about it.
Yeah, I might need to watch it again before I can pass a final judgment, because as hard as you tried to keep your expectations realistic going into something like this, you're going to be fanboying. Like, I'm pretty sure I might have squeezed one of my wife's fingers off, because I was just like, you know, I was just like, oh, look, that's, you know. And so you're definitely having fanboy moments on it, you know, definitely going into it with rose or maybe green tinted glasses. I don't know at this point, but right. But I wouldn't say best movie ever, but I also wouldn't panic completely, because it, for what it was fun. It's not something that you could take super duper seriously, because it doesn't take itself seriously.
Right.
And that's the thing with Beetlejuice. It's not going to be high cinema.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Derpy said, and I'll get into my expectations and stuff like that in a minute, but he said it was fun. I'll say that there was definitely an unnecessary moments and it dragged a bit. So it was 7.5 out of 10.
That's fair.
And I talked about the runtime. I thought the runtime was fine. I thought the characterization of the characters, with Catherine O'Hara's character coming back, Lydia and her daughter, I thought all that stuff worked. Mm-hmm. It was the Willem Dafoe appearance. There was no need to have him in there. No need to have the ex-wife in there. Just have the exposition of just having those characters there and having that conflict with all of them, because they're all going through this stuff. And then have the douchebag, Rory, having that conflict too. So you have two plot lines that you can go off of and just have that. Yeah. Be that center.
There were too many... The ex-wife, they played her up like she was going to be the big bad, but Rory was more of an imposition than her.
Yeah, he was more of the asshole.
Yeah, like he was more of a problem. Like, you know, all she wanted to do was kill Beetlejuice, and that's what half of the other people wanted anyway.
Right. You know? So basically, like, she's giving everybody else what they wanted. Right.
Good luck. Come on. You know, here he is on a platter for you.
Right. So if I had to rate this, I would go with a 2 out of 5. Because I had fun, but it was just the whole delivery of all the other bits that dragged on for a 5-10 minute scene that they could have put something else in there in its place to give an extra layer maybe to the ex-wife, to where we could actually care about her. Mm-hmm. But no, it just falls flat on that. It was anticlimactic. The songs at the very end of it didn't work. It was
that completely turned me off on it.
I just felt like at that part where Jenna Ortega and the grandmother's dancing, I just felt like, oh, Jenna Ortega likes to dance, so let's put her in this whole entire choreography of her dancing with Lydia's mother.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought in my head. And even
there were a couple of very clear callbacks to the original Deo scene.
Yeah, I like the Deo better than I do this. And even Jump in the Line was something that I really liked in the first one. So they had two musical numbers in this and that one. They have the one where Beetlejuice is on the guitar singing that 80s song, that like I mentioned, and then you also have this. I thought they could have just had that one singing bit, and that should have been it.
Right. Because him with the guitar, that was, what, 45 seconds of singing?
Like, yeah, that's just 45 seconds. Perfect.
And with the first one, Harry Belafonte being throughout the entire movie made sense because before they died, you know, Adam's puttering around the house. He's playing this song. He's playing that song. So clearly that's the soundtrack, the vibe of the household.
And I know that we did. I don't know if we covered about Adam and Barbara. Not being, well, yeah, we did. We just talked about the CGI and stuff like that, too. And I thought the fact that they wrote him out was fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had an okay time with it. Like, oh my God, I have to go out and buy this movie, which is something I really want to do. But I don't know if I would actually own it in my collection.
I wouldn't pay to watch it again. I would need to watch it again to make a fair shake at it. I'll stream it, you know.
Yeah, I'll stream it on Max or something.
Yeah, I'm not saying necessarily I'll sail the high seas to stream it either, but you know, I wouldn't pay to see it again. I wouldn't buy it,
right?
And so, like when we walked out of the theater, I actually asked my wife, I was like, "So how much did you pay for these tickets? Was it worth it?" Which to see Beetlejuice, we paid the same amount we paid at a smaller theater to see Wolverine and Deadpool, or Deadpool and Wolverine in 3D. So,
right. I paid about $20 for mine at Cinemark.
It was 23. Just over 10 and change for each of us.
Okay.
But the theater we went to see Deadpool and Wolverine in 3D was $10 flat a piece. So
it's like, because it was at that theater that I go to and pick you. So yeah.
The theater we went to for Beetlejuice was the Grand in Hattiesburg.
Okay. Yeah.
A little fancy.
All right. So my question for you guys that are watching right now, what did you guys think of Beetlejuice? What were some of your favorite scenes? What didn't work for you? What worked for you? Do you think this is a 10 out of 10 or a 5 out of 5? Tell me in the comments below. It doesn't matter what I think or Beck thinks. It matters what you guys think. Because all movies are subjective. So I'm kind of curious about what you guys have to say. Even after the show, go on ahead and email me at movieslovesunite@gmail.com. I love to geek out with you guys. I'd like to actually have a conversation with you about this film if you've seen it. Stuff like that. So smash that like button, smash the subscribe button. Also do visit me on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, wherever you guys get your podcasts from. Beck, thank you so much for being on this again with me to talk about Beetlejuice, because I definitely had a good time watching this movie and to be able to just see where both of us landed with this, if we both felt the same way that we did coming out of this. Because I even told you, I said I had some mixed emotions about it, but I'm glad that we...
I agree.
And you and I both have the same kind of concerns about it as well. So, with that being said, guys, that's going to be it. But tune in Friday at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, as we're going to be reviewing Terminator 2 Judgment Day. So, we're going to be reviewing that. And then, also Wednesday, we're going to do an audio-only podcast of Rossi and I talking about top 5 comfort TV shows. So, we're going to talk about that. And then towards the end of the month, we're going to be doing our 40-year-old virgin review. So we're going to revisit that after so many years of it being out. So always until next time, guys, have a great and safe night. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. Thank you again, Beck. I do appreciate it. Thank you to Burpee. Thank you to JoJo, who's always watching. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. Bye-bye.